Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another episode. Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski. Everything sucks. last night on SmackDown was fine. It's a perfectly decent episode of SmackDown. Some things they did really pissed me off, but what else is new? Less things piss me off than is usual. I think it wasn't great either. It was good. Good WWE programming is death for Sour Graps. Because if something is great, I will praise it. You've seen me. It's rare. But if something is great, I will praise it to the moon. I'll spend 20 minutes on a segment where Randy Orton turns heel on Edge. Remember that? It was a fucking year ago. But I spent forever just lauding how amazingly put together that segment was where Randy Orton tried to murder Edge on the Raw after the Royal Rumble. So if something is great, I will not shy about it. I will talk about it. Something is absolutely fantastic. Usually it's shit. So I have plenty of time to talk about the shit and talk about why I hate it so much. When a WWE is just fine, when it's just, good, well, then I really can't rip holes in it because, it's fine. But I can't, overly praise it because it's not great. It's just there. It exists. I mean, this was better than something that just existed because there were good things. But I say that last night's episode of SmackDown was very promising. It's a promising episode of SmackDown. SmackDown is uniformly much, much, much better than Raw, and is actually improved to the point where it's consistently better than NXT. It pains me to say this. But also, Otis hasn't been on the show much recently. I mean, he was barely on the show last night. Whenever he's there, he's like the 15th most important person. So that doesn't drag it down. There are other acts on SmackDown that I don't see very often. Like I had to deal with fucking Corbin last night. We'll talk about that. But it wasn't. They're building something that doesn't really involve him. So I understand. Whatever. Like it's fucking Corbin. You know what I mean? Like the people on SmackDown that I hate haven't been around. So they don't drag down the overall average of the show. We'll see what happens there. But there were the things that happened that were really good on SmackDown were not without their drawbacks. Like if you made a pros and cons list for SmackDown last night, there was a con for almost every pro. So maybe this episode was worse than I thought. But at the end of the show, because it's SmackDown, so it's technically less stuff to review. And B, I don't tend to spend a lot of time on good segments because there's not a lot of stuff to overly praise and not a lot of stuff to shit all over. So at the end of this episode, I will be reviewing the awful awful WrestleMania reveal video that WWE put out. Like it's awful. There's one good part of it and they fucked that up too. And I'll tell you why, but that'll be the end of the show. So let's start with how this is going to start. Great. This is kind of an addendum to last week's episode. Apollo Crews slaps Big E in the face after their match goes to a draw because of a double pin. This is last week. And that means Big E's like, let's start the damn match over again. Big E was ready to walk away and say that was a good match. And presumably they'd have a rematch since there was a double pin. But Cruz was in the heat of the moment, slapped Big E, and Big E said, let's start it over again. And Big E won decisively in that rematch that started right after the first match. Later that night, Apollo Crews goes on Talking Smack, and Paul Heyman is there and tells him, "Hold, like you're, this is an amazing pep talk. Like if you haven't seen it, it's like 4 minutes long, and it's just Paul Heyman talking at Apollo Crews, who doesn't say anything, but he is present and he is reacting, and it's some great work from Apollo Crews." Basically, Paul Heyman says, "You pinned the champ. I mean, he pinned you at the same time, but you pinned the champ. That is a disputed championship." When I always said that, you know, Brock was undisputed, that this is disputed. It's disputed. So you have a chance to go for a week, a month, whenever, to train for your rematch. When you can call yourself the champion because you pinned him. He pinned you. But that, and so instead, you got hot under the collar, and you forced the issue, and you lost. And that makes you look stupid. There's also some really extended, weird metaphor that I don't know what it was, because they cut to Apollo in a one-shot and then bleeped out what Heyman had to say, because he said something like, would you walk into Big E's house and kick down his door and take the food off his plate and beep? Because that's what you're doing. That's what you're doing. You're letting him kick down your door, walk into your house, take the food off your plate and beep. That's what you're doing. And I can only assume the very long beep is for an extended, like, take the food off your plate, walk into your bedroom, and make love, make sweet, sweet, dirty love to your wife. Just turn her over on all fours and go to town. Like, I can only assume that's the kind of thing that Paul Heyman had shoehorned to his little metaphor there, because it was a long beep. Like it was, I might have been exaggerating with the beep, but it's not that exaggerated. It was a long beep. It was several seconds. It wasn't like one word. It was a whole extended visualization. I can only think was sexual, because otherwise they probably wouldn't have believed it. But when he talked about that, Apollo Crews looked like he was going to murder Paul Heyman. But Paul Heyman gets his pep talk, and like basically you could watch in real time. You could watch Apollo Crews change. And that's fucking brilliant. Now again, not on the show last night. It was on Talking Smack the week before. So I'm not overly praising anything that was on the show last night, but goddamn, that was fucking great. Getting a chance to actually watch somebody change how they think, how they view the world and the people around them in real time is very, very rare in WWE programming. I loved it. And it was like, wow, this is a really cool thing. We get to like have Paul Heyman's little pep talk here facilitates an honest to God Apollo Crews heel turn. Because even after he slapped Big E in the face, you could tell that was in the heat of the moment, and his two competitors just really getting pissed at each other in the moment. But before that, Apollo Crews was still affable, smiley guy. Not after that pep talk. And the best part about it is it got a continuation immediately, new information, because the following week on SmackDown, we get right? Is this how it starts? Apollo. I guess later in the episode is when he's backstage. He's at some point in the episode, Apollo Crews is hanging out in Roman's private dressing room, like sitting on the couch right next to, you know, Roman on the other couch. They're just having a conversation, you know, like men do about heel turns. We don't hear what they have to say, but I've always thought that, and I pitched this for Damian Priest, that Roman should bring in hired guns. Guys who aren't in the bloodline who can help him stay on top because Jey Uso sucks now. Like, he's great. I love him. But he doesn't win ever. Like, he fucks up things that he's not supposed to fuck up. So it seems like a guy like Roman Reigns would not enjoy that too much and would probably try and find people who wouldn't fuck up. So, Heyman's going over the contract with Roman Reigns. I guess Apollo wasn't there at this moment. But there's a contract for the Royal Rumble match between Roman and Adam Pearce that is definitely going to happen. Everybody, last week when Adam Pearce won that gauntlet match, everybody was totally right in freaking out about, oh, why would you let this person who's not even a wrestler have the match on Royal Rumble? Now, I know I had the same basic reaction to Goldberg getting the match at the Royal Rumble versus Drew McIntyre, but that's different. It's different because I say so. And that's the only reason. because I don't want to be a hypocrite. That's why. Ah, lemonade. The official beverage of Sour Graps. So sour. Gives me that sour power. Yeah, here we go. Heyman's it's a standard boilerplate contract. It's really nothing to look at. It's fine. And then Roman Reigns is like, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like it either, says Heyman. You know what it needs? And I agree with you. It needs a stipulation. I mean, it's a Royal Rumble. We need to have a real thing. We got to make it real. So Heyman takes a contract to Pierce for some adjustment, he says. And you can consider this matter handled. So he walks off. Now, Jey Uso cuts a long promo. Me and my cousin, Oos, we run the show. We run this show. We also run all of WWE. And when I win the Royal Rumble, which I am declaring for now, Oos, I am going to challenge Drew McIntyre, and I'm going to go to Raw, and we're going to run both shows. Now, I do love Jey Uso saying I'm going to be in the Royal Rumble, and dispelling all the bullshit about that Michael Cole would ask over and over again over the next couple of months. Now, when Jey Uso, if he were to win the Royal Rumble, would he challenge his cousin Roman Reigns for the title? You have to wonder. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because Jey cut a promo about how he's going to challenge Drew McIntyre. So that dispels all of that immediately, and I like it. Everyone should thank Roman Reigns for fresh towels and hot food in the locker room. And for all the millions of fans tuning in every week, everybody tunes in just to see Roman. And then the piped in boos get really loud. Oh, we don't like what you're saying to us, Jey Uso. Just listen to all the fake noise you pumped in. Everybody bragged about Nakamura's gauntlet match performance, but because all it took was me and my cousin to shut him down immediately. And then Makimura, his music enters, but it's the old music. It's the babyface music, not the one with the rap that you can't sing along to. You know what I mean? But it's got the violin. Remember the violin? Where you could go, oh, whatever the hell that was. Remember that? It's the people would love to sing along to it. And then we're like, no, he turned heel. So we have to make it so the crowd won't sing along to it, because that's what you do with baby faces. And we can't have the crowd sing along to heels music, which I think is not 98% of the reason why they turned Bobby Roode heel. Turned Bobby Roode babyface when he came up from NXT to the main roster. Because in NXT, everyone was singing Glorious. And it didn't matter. He was still a heel. People just liked the song. They didn't live love him because he had the song. They loved the song. You know what I mean? So they were like, no. If he's on the main roster and he has a song people like to sing, he's got to be a babyface. Or change the song then. And Roode now enters. You notice they enter now to Ziggle's music, because nobody wants to sing. I'm here to show the world. I'm here to show the world. Nobody wants to sing that song. So yeah, they changed Nakamura's music back to the original one without the rapping in it. Thus fully cementing the babyface turn. But really tipping their hand. You know what I mean? Because you could say that he was just caught up in the moment and showing some respect to a fellow warrior in Daniel Bryan when he shook his hand after the match. And yeah, he wants a title shot. Everybody should want a title shot. Hell, Baron Corbin was in that gauntlet match. If Baron Corbin had won the gauntlet match or had won every match up until the final one when Adam Pearce came out, are you telling me that Roman and Jey Uso would have come in and said, hello, we respectfully request that you lay down so that Adam Pearce can pin you? And Baron Corbin would say, I doff my crown to you, good sirs. I shall do as you request. No. If Baron Corbin had won, they would have beat the crap out of him too, so Adam Pearce could get the cheap victory. Just beating up Nakamura should not mean that Nakamura is a babyface. It does, because this is WWE and they only do things one way, but it shouldn't. And I appreciate that there might have been a little wiggle room. You know what I mean? But not anymore. No, they said you're entering to your babyface music now. And that's the thing. There's no live crowd, so nobody's going to sing to it. Like, if the first time Nakamura comes out with his old music, the sing-along music, is in front of a live crowd, and they get to sing along to the music for the first time in years, that's great. This is just being like, I mean, what does Nakamura like go to the sound guy and say, hey, do you still have an MP3 of my old music? You know, before they added the rap. Can you play that one instead? I'm feeling in a babyface mood tonight. No, he doesn't say that. Nobody says that. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's weird. So why are you playing the old music now, if not to signal us that he's a babyface? That's stupid. It's just stupid. The match is very good. I forgot. Nakamura comes out, and because he's a babyface now, they have to have him cut a cringy promo, even though his English isn't great. You know what I mean? It is not. I'm not casting aspersions on the guy. He's got a very thick Japanese accent. That's fine. I don't begrudge that at all. But you making him cut promos in not his original language, his native tongue. And then people are like, "Oh, you can't cut a promo. Can't cut a promo." Well, then stop asking him to cut a promo, because he goes, "Your cousin Roman Reigns might be the big dog, which makes you his little puppy." Get it? Cause I'm so, honestly, I'm really glad they went with little puppy and not little bitch, because that's what they normally do. So thank heaven for small blessings, I suppose. So Jay gets pissed about having been called a little puppy. Shinsuke Nakamura hits him in the face, kicks him, something like that. And then they go to commercial and they come back and the match is great. I mean, it's very good. It's fine. But we all knew Jay wasn't going to win. And the way they could have swerved us is by having him win via blatant cheating and the ref not address it and let him win anyway. And then we were like, what? How did that happen? But he does cheat. And he's got the feet on the ropes. And So it's Charles Robinson, Little Nate, is the ref, and Uso rolls up Nakamura for the pin, but he put his foot on the ropes. So no, I won't count to three. So Uso is like yelling at the referee, and Nakamura rolls him up from behind, which he kicks out of. And then hits the Kinshasa and he gets the win. Halfway through the match, right at one of the commercial breaks, not the beginning of the match, halfway through the match, as a surprise, Cesaro came down and was on commentary for most of the match. And he kept professing his friendship with Nakamura a little too much, methinks. So, remember how I was like, but they can't have Cesaro and Nakamura try to get the SmackDown tag titles back because they're doing something with Nakamura. Well, apparently they can't have the SmackDown tag titles go back to Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro because they're going to fucking break up Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. They're going to break them up because they can't, no tag teams are safe. No tag teams are safe, people. It's so sad. He keeps talking about how Shinsuke Nakamura, he's my best friend. So he hits the ring after the match and celebrates with Shinsuke Nakamura, which is fine. But he plays heel through the rest of the night, which we're going to talk about. So they're definitely keeping him heel so that he can turn on Shinsuke Nakamura at some point. And then they'll have a Shinsuke Nakamura versus Cesaro feud, which could be great. But it might not be. It might be lackluster. They might not let him actually do the real work they need to do. So the promises that they've made is that Nakamura is a major player here. He's going to remain a thorn in the side of the Usos. The Uso, the bloodline. In the side of Jey Uso and Roman Reigns, and we'll probably get a singles match versus Roman for the title in either February or early March pay-per-view, which he'll lose, and then Roman will have his big match at Mania versus somebody else. You gotta have some people around for Roman to go through during early to mid Mania season, just the way it works. The trick of it will be, what is his role at Mania? because of his role at Mania, is just person in the Battle Royal, if they even have that this year, or on the sidelines or in some shitty tag match. If that's all he is at Mania, and then by May we forgot he even had a push, then they will have fucked it up again. And that's, I mean, that's, it's more likely to me that he is forgotten about entirely or in some terrible, stupid, silly program with somebody by mid-May than... it's more likely that that happens than he is a serious major player on SmackDown during the summer, because they don't have a track record of doing things right. So I'm allowed to doubt them. That's how it works. Benefit of the doubt goes the other way too. Benefit I don't know. What's opposite of benefit? The opposite of benefit of the doubt. That's what they have. No benefit of the doubt. No, non-benefit. What's the opposite of benefit? I'm going to look that up right now. Let's do this. I'm going to look it up. So I'm going to figure it out. Opposite of out. B-O-U-B. There's a B in there. D-O-U-B-T. Opposite of doubt. Opposite of doubt. Certainty. The opposite of doubt is certainty. Benefit of the certainty? No, that doesn't work. Okay, opposite of benefit. Let's do that. Opposite of benefit. This is riveting radio, I know. Opposite of benefit. Detriment. Sure. The detriment of the doubt. They have earned the detriment of the doubt. That is very good. They have earned the detriment of the doubt with me. I will doubt them forever because they suck. On the whole, they suck. So they have earned the detriment of the doubt. They also, assuming the worst is the best opposite of benefit of the doubt, which I do. I always say I assume the worst of this company, and I should. So, later, so Tony DeVille is talking to Adam Pearce, and Paul Heyman walks in. He has such his wonderful, rapport, silent, kinship with young Sonya Deville. I love it. I think it's so cool that they're building to something where Sonya Deville is a Paul Heyman girl. I'm so into it. Let's keep that percolating in the background. Yeah. Anyway, so here we go. He goes on the sales pitch, blah, 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 blah. The new contract will make Pierce versus Roman Reigns a no DQ match. I don't appreciate that he's like, wow, you have wonderful perfume, Sonya Deville. Like, nah, well, let's not do that, Paul. He says, so I'll sign this contract, but it's a no DQ match. I'm going to get horribly injured, but that's what you and Reigns want. So later, we see Jey Uso arguing with Charles Robinson. What were you doing out there, ref? And the ref says, you had your feet on the ropes. What does that matter? Count it right. What are you doing? Don't you know who runs things around here? Don't you have a family? Didn't your daughter just get married? You're going to lose your job, man. What are you doing? And Charles Robinson looks full of consternation about this. So I do love this. The idea that they could put a ref in Reigns' back pocket, that he could win via fast counts and stuff like that because they They got a corrupt ref in their midst. The guy that Charles Robinson, if Charles Robinson was the guy who refs all of Reigns' matches, and he's able to, and then you could do a thing where like he could get a ref bump, and then you could have another ref that runs down to referee the rest of the match, and Reigns is always questioning that guy's calls, or maybe it's a special guest referee. Like there's a lot. If you're gonna keep this Reigns train on the tracks for another year, doing this, keeping him the champion for a long, long time, and going through lots of different challengers, all we got to set up a lot of different things. A lot of different balls got to be up in the air, and one of them could be we have a corrupt referee in the mix, and then. How do we deal with that if we're the babyface trying to get you know Reigns out of the way? I still believe Reigns should not have to cheat to win most of the time. I want Reigns to have a full stable. I want Reigns to have guys like both Usos, Apollo Crews, Damian Priest. I want him to have at least four or five flunkies, lackeys, guys who, you know, different types and different styles, not AJ Styles, different styles of guys that are guys that run with him. And I want him to set up different kinds of gauntlet matches, handicap matches, things like that to make the babyface earn the title shot. Like you might be able to you can have a shot at my title if you beat this guy. Oh, you did? Okay, now you gotta beat this guy. Oh, you beat him too? Now you gotta beat both Usos at the same time. I don't make the rules. Well, actually I do. And that's the rule. And then you have the corrupt referee ref those guys' matches, the flunkies' matches, to make it even harder for the babyface to break through and get the title shot versus Roman. And what I would also like, and I know this is going to really fuck up the build of a certain babyface, different kinds of babyfaces in different ways. I think that once you get to the final boss of Roman Reigns, he should be the final boss. He should wax the floor with people. Like just murk fucking people. Just kill him. And that way, when he actually does lose the title, it will mean so much. You have him hitting low blows on guys and winning because his cousin handcuffed a guy to a fucking cage. Now, the way they had him react to it is great. You know, like, oh, look at that. Isn't that a shame that I had to win like that? That's too bad. But The Miz should win all the time by cheating. Roman Reigns should make it frustrating because he'll never give a guy a match against him. But once he does get in the match with somebody, he should just fucking wipe the floor with people. I think that'd be really great. I really do. To really build him into a certain point. Now, not obviously you can't keep that going forever. But I think that he should figure out a way to just wreck everyone and leave. That was his catchphrase before he was the tribal chief. Remember, he came back, beat the fuck out of the Fiend and Braun, wreck everyone and leave. He showed up on SmackDown, beat the fuck out of both Braun and Bray, and sent them over to Raw because they couldn't coexist on the same show as Roman Reigns. If they could figure out a way to properly write and book and present a babyface Seth Rollins, which they still have never figured out how to do, I don't think, not really. That's the guy who should ultimately take down Roman. That's the best story. I don't know if they can actually present that version of Seth correctly because they haven't really done it ever, unfortunately. So, Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode, Roode, Steady, and Bebolf, they won the tag titles last week, and they had to, right? It was urgent. We needed to see it. It had to happen. No, it didn't, because they capitalized all the momentum of them winning the fucking tag titles by them not appearing on the show last night. It's such a great thing that you did that. So why did you do that? Why did you do that? That doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, why would you need to do that? Okay. And then the Street Profits cut a promo. It's less wackadoo than their normal promos, which is good. We're going to get a rematch. And when we do, we're going to beat them. We're not scared of them. They attacked Montez's leg, which is why he re-injured it during the match, which is why they lost, he says. I guess they talk about how they aren't scared of anybody, which is why they gave them the match, even though we had beaten them many times before, which I guess is a good reason why they gave the match to begin with. But I feel like the champs don't choose who they have a match with. It's the fucking bookers that do that, right? Unless you're Roman Reigns. So the bookers are the ones who are at fault for setting the match up to begin with, not the Street Profits. Let's not blame them. They're not whatever. You say, even when the Street Profits are down, they're up. Get it? The Street Profits are up, and they want the smoke. So this is the segment where Apollo Crews is backstage with Roman Reigns, and then Heyman comes in with a contract, and Crews is about to leave, and Roman's like, "No, you stay. It's cool. You can watch and you can see what's going on in at the top." I love this, man. Like Roman, like say no, he's cool, he can stay. About Apollo Crews is honestly maybe the best rub that Apollo Crews has ever gotten in WWE. And this partnership with Roman, if they don't book him to lose a lot of matches, which they might, this partnership with Roman could be the best thing that ever happens to Apollo Crews in WWE. Like the thing that build, I'm not saying like if he were to win WWE championship one day, that would obviously be better, but that I don't think will happen unless this thing with Roman works. And I think it could. So Heyman's like, hey, it's a last man standing match now. And I didn't want that. That's not what I wanted. I want a last man standing match. I don't know if that's good. If Crews, Piers, sorry. I don't know if Adam Pearce is going to agree to that. Like, he will, because we'll make him, looking at Apollo Crews as though Apollo Crews is going to be part of it too, which is just great. Like, that's good. Again, more henchmen for Roman Reigns. I don't think everyone should have henchmen, and I don't think the same henchmen should be passed around willy-nilly from mob boss to mob boss. One guy should have all the henchmen, and that guy is Roman Reigns. I want, like, here's another thing. Like, I don't know. I honestly have no idea what his ceiling is in I have no idea what his ceiling is in NXT, this guy. But here's a dude who would be fucking great as the literal heavy for Roman Reigns. Bronson Reed from NXT. I do not know what his ceiling is in NXT. I don't know if he's ever going to get. He might get like a North American title one-on-one shot or something down the line. I don't think he's ever going to be NXT champion. So it might be worth moving him up now. I think he's camera ready. I think he's got a totally unique thing about him. I mean, he's one of those guys that it'd be kind of cool to like watch him, like Mr. Hughes, like he wrestles in a fucking suit. Like he'd take the jacket off, but he'd have like the shirt and the suspenders and the tie. Maybe take the tie off because that's like a foreign object. But like let him just wrestle dudes in a like a giant, like I think he's I'm going to butcher the priority. Maori? I think he's from like the New Zealand Pacific Islanders tribe. One of the tribes down there. Not Samoan, I don't believe. But still, like just he's from the same general region. It would work. And he's a totally different guy than Apollo Crews, Damian Priest, or either of the Usos. That is my dream team. Get it together, people. Book it. Roman Reigns is a leader, right? Apollo Crews and Damian Priest are the hitmen. Usos are the tag team. They're going to win tag gold and keep it forever. And the guy who's the actual heavy, who just wrecks people, is Bronson Reed. That's your five. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six guys. That's your full stable. That's all you need. Those six, you could ride that shit into 2024. I'm telling you, there's all sorts of great shit you could do. Oh, I'm all Twitter with it. Let's do that. Let's do that. Get Bronson Reed up here now. Get him on the phone. Tell him I got a pitch for him. Anyway, so he's going to we're going to get Pierce to sign this contract. So last week Billie Kay guilted the Riot Squad into letting her become a member of the Riot Squad, kind of. And so they said they didn't say no. So he said, I'm looking forward to getting all punked out. So they come out last night and Billie Kay is kind of punked out. Like she's wearing like these boots, these like ankle boots with like all kinds of buckles all over them and metal studs and, like a short plaid skirt and some like torn up fishnets and like a Liv and Ruby shirt that's like all torn up around the belly, and she's got her hair up in a top knot. She's wearing leather cuffs on her wrists. She got all punked out, and they all come out together. Ruby's a little unsure about it. Liv is just jazzed up for her match, but they do the thing where they get up on the apron together, and Billie Kay reaches up, and Liv has to pull her up. And then Billie Kay gets up on the ring ropes where like Ruby and Liv do their taunt. And Billie's taunt is to kind of like lean back against the ring ropes and like make like a kind of a punk rock face at the hard cam. And it's so effective. She is the absolute funniest member of any roster, male or female. She's so great. Her improv skills and her timing and her the stuff she can do facially to make things funny, she's just amazing. So she's on commentary for this match between Liv Morgan and Natalya. Now Natalya has brought out Tamina, and apparently they're friends now, I guess. And Billie Kay on the commentary is fantastic. And the match is okay. But this act has so much potential, and I feel like they fell bass ackwards into it. They don't know what they have, as proven by how they are handling it. Billie Kay with the Riot Squad, slowly, over a matter of weeks, getting them to have full confidence in her as a full-fledged member of the group, only for her to fuck it up for them in the end. That's your storyline. Unless you want to do the wholesome thing, which is she actually becomes part of the group and they become women's tag champs. And the way that, like, here's the thing. Billie Kay is annoying on purpose, right? In a way that, like, is funny. She's trying to be annoying, and you laugh at her because she's so annoying, right? As opposed to, oh, I don't know, Lana, who's also annoying on purpose, but not in a funny way, in a get the fuck off my television screen kind of way. And they tried to build her up into somebody we would have sympathy for and cheer for when she won shit. But we never did, because she's awful. Like, I don't mean like awful in the ring, although I still maintain that she is. I mean like awful, like as an awful human being that you wouldn't want to be friends with. Just as how they presented her on television. Billie Kay is annoying, but like you don't take her seriously because that's the character they presented. There's a difference there. If you had the thing where like Billie Kay won the tag titles for the Riot Squad because Ruby Riot got scratched from the match because she's not cleared or whatever. So it's got to be Liv and Billy out there to win the tag titles or they lose their shot at the titles, right? And Billie Kay is the one who gets the pin on Charlotte, let's say, to win the tag titles. Because Billie Kay did something smart and like she tagged herself in so Charlotte didn't know she was tagged in or whatever. And so she got like a drop on her, or she's the one who pulled Asuka off the apron so Charlotte couldn't make a tag or whatever. She's the smart one. She's the one who had the wherewithal to make a good decision. And she's the one who gets the pin, even if it's a stupid roll up, to win the match and become tag champs. And the moment when she and Liv and Ruby all celebrate in a big group hug, holding the titles together in the middle of the ring, would be an immense pop of people who love wholesome shit. That's something to root for. The redemption arc of Billie Kay from this heel who we all kind of don't like, even though she's really funny, through to trying to make best friends with this team who doesn't like her, through to like actually winning the thing for her team because she's such good friends with them and she wants to make it work. And Ruby, the one who doubted her the whole time, and Liv's the one who like says give her a chance, and all you could do all kinds of stuff with all of that. And they still might do that. They're not going to do that because they have earned the detriment of the doubt. But if they still could, it's still on the table. But it is an inauspicious beginning when in their first match as a trio, even though she's not actually in the match, you know what I mean? They're an act together now. They came out together. They're an act. Billie Kay getting so scared of Tamina that she runs through the ring, getting in the way of Liv so that Liv gets rolled up by Natalya. And immediately, Ruby and Liv hate Billie Kay. That's not a great way to start. We already knew they didn't like Billie Kay. She should start to try to earn her keep. If next week they do this again, or next week they already broke them up, fuck them. They don't know at all what they have here. These three, I mean, they tried for so many fucking weeks to build sympathy for Lana by having her get Samoan dropped through a goddamn announce table like 9 goddamn weeks in a row. It never worked. Nobody cares. I think people could be made to care about Billie Kay because she really is that funny and that good at her job. I think you could easily do that. It would not take a lot of work at all. to get that done. But they'll fuck it up because they do. Rey Mysterio versus Baron Corbin with Dominic Mysterio on commentary. In case you're wondering, Bobby Heenan's place as the greatest color commentary guy ever is safe. Because Dominic's not coming after it. Who, boy, is this guy bad? He's terrible commentary. But the whole point of commentary seemed to be, and only this, was just Corey Graves egging on Dominic to attack Baron Corbin. Like, that was, it was just Corey Graves going like, oh, Corey, are you going to let him look at you like that? Look at that. Look how he's disrespecting your father. You should do something. You need to stand up for yourself. Like, it was just, Corey Graves was that guy, like, in middle school who'd, like, you hear what he said? You hear what he said about your girl? He said, your girlfriend's a slut. You should totally hit him after school. You should totally hit him after school. You should, like, walk up behind him and, like, just, like, hit him in the back of the head. And be really fun. You should do it. You should do it. I heard he said, like, really, I think he said your girlfriend's a slut. You should totally do it. I think you should. Fuck that guy. He just wants to see violence. He's a sociopath. So Corey Graves just basically keeps egging on Mysterio, Dominic, to get involved in the match. Corbin at one point comes over and shoves Dominic and says, what are you going to do? You're not going to do anything. You're not going to do anything. Like, well, look what he did to you. He disrespected you, Dominic. You have to do something now. And so Dominic does, like, kind of get involved. He punches Dominic in the face. Dominic runs in to, like, get revenge. And Rey stops his son. Don't do that. Get out of the ring. What are you doing here, son? So then Corbin takes advantage and hits the end of days for the pin. And Dominic and Rey are upset with each other. We'll go watch this. We're going to go back to this thing. There's another thing that happens before, but we're going to talk about that after this. So Dominic is backstage with Rey Mysterio. You've been fighting giants his entire career, and now you're backing down from this guy? I'm not backing down from anybody. I'm just being smart about battling with King Corbin. You need to do the same. This man is a former United States champion. I don't remember anything about his reign because it wasn't impressive at all. He doesn't say that. I'm saying it. He won the Money in the Bank briefcase and then squandered it because he couldn't figure out how to cash it in and couldn't pin fucking Jinder Mahal. He didn't say that part. I'm adding that in. So this is what he says. This man is a former United States champion. Former Mr. Money in the Bank. And then Dominic is about to say, I don't care. But then Rey stops him and goes, shush, a former Gold Gloves champion. Which, like, okay. So are they going to do a thing where, like, Corbin punches Dominic so hard, he puts him in a coma? What are they going to do to get Dominic off TV so he can get some more seasoning? Because, Jesus, he hasn't wrestled in fucking forever. Like, that storyline, remember we were all joking, like, ha, 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 it's seriously, it looks like the only person that Dominic is allowed to wrestle is Seth Rollins or maybe Buddy Murphy. No, seriously, it looks like that's the only people he was allowed to wrestle. Because he hasn't wrestled anybody else. He's still technically an active member of the roster. I don't think he's wrestled anybody but those two guys. And he can't wrestle Buddy Murphy anymore because Buddy Murphy is off, you know, fucking his sister, I guess. We haven't seen Buddy Murphy in fucking forever. I don't know what they're doing with that. Like, why? Again, this is why they have earned the detriment of the doubt with me. As much as I hated that shitty storyline, and still do if they bring it back, the thing with Buddy Murphy and the teenager. Like, it's shitty. It's a shitty storyline, but you spent all this time building it up. So Murphy was this guy who, like, turned on Seth Rollins and proved that he was an honorable member of society by fucking a 19-year-old. You know, like, that's – you spent all this time creating that and then just shunted it off television. What is that? Why isn't Murphy fighting Corbin? I honestly think they could have some good matches if you let Corbin really go and not have him just do fucking rest holds all the time. I don't know. I want Murphy back. Murphy's great. You spent all this time making him look into a real threat, and then you took him off TV, and now he's not the kind of star that you can take off TV for a month or 6 weeks or whatever and then bring him back. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, I'm really excited to have him back. And we're like, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that guy. Waste. That terrible storyline would still be terrible. But at least they would have built something for the future and really relied on that storyline to get a guy over and then push him to the moon after that. Doing that terrible storyline to get us nowhere is fucking unconscionable. You did all of that, and what have you gained from it? At this point, you have gained nothing. Because Aaliyah's not there, Murphy's not on TV. Nothing. You've gained nothing from this storyline. You've gained a Baron Corbin feud for the Mysterio clan. Jesus. So Adam Pearce is walking backstage. And so Heyman's like, no, there's a little wrinkle, but no, it's not a DQ match. It's a last man standing match. And Pearce is like, well, who's that going to benefit? Obviously. Fine. Yes, I will sign the contract. Well, no. We're going to do it in the ring tonight. Everybody. Okay, cool. Great. So Bailey has a new talk show. It's called Ding Dong Hello, which is her own little catchphrase that she came up with, by the way, which is why I love it. It wouldn't be funny if they did it, but she came up with it on her own. She says it, and ding dong hello, I think it's fine. So she has the set has a big door, like in a frame, and welcome to Ding Dong Hello, and she comes through the door. She's got Sally Jesse Raphael glasses and a big. She's not dressed in her gear. She looks like this talk show host that she's doing, which is great. And her special guest is Bianca Belair. And so Bianca Belair comes down the ramp, comes up the steps, and walks directly into like the fake room that they're in the ring. And Belair's like, no, go around. You got to use the door. And so Bianca Belair has to get up off the stool, walk around, and go behind the door. And then she just stands there. And Bailey's like, dude, ring the doorbell. And Bianca's like, you know it's me. Just do it. So she ding-dong and walks in. It's funny. It's quirky and fun. And the detriment of the doubt, it's also a WWE segment. WWE segment, WWE talk show segment, which means I give it a month before it is as unfunny and lifeless as a normal episode of Miz TV, because they'll take all the fun out of it, they'll overproduce it and write it into the ground, and it'll be just shit. But Last night's episode was a delight. It really was. So Bailey says, if you think you're the EST, maybe I'm the EST because I pinned you. Like, well, fine. Listen, we'll have a rematch right now. Let's just go do it. Let's put on your gear. Let's do it. Like, no, how about we have an obstacle course competition next week? The ultimate athlete obstacle course. Beller's like, well, there's no way that you can beat me in an obstacle course. Now, ding dong that. Okay, so that's fun. They're good together. I think Bailey's amazing. I think she had an amazing 2020 and 2019 as well. It's not a great sign that they're like, okay, cool. You're not the champ anymore. Here's a talk show segment. Like, I think she can knock it out of the park. I do. But yeah, I don't know what this is going to do. Did I miss? No, it hasn't happened yet. There's an alpha training segment. Alpha Academy. So Chad Gable and is getting Otis and Daniel Bryan ready for the Royal Rumble. You know, hips. They're squatting and jumping, I guess. Was his confidence Kayla Braxton is there? She asks, was your confidence hurt last week losing to Shinsuke Nakamura? It's like, I have nothing bad to say about him. Like, we shook hands after the match last week. He's great. There's no shame in losing to a competitor like Shinsuke Nakamura, which I'm glad Daniel Bryan's putting him over. That's great. But even including the win he got last night, he is now 6 for his last 20. He's won 6 matches out of his last 20. So you can cool it with the whole, like, what a great competitor he is. Like, he might be, but you've booked him like absolute dog shit for a long fucking time. Anyway, Cesaro interrupts. And he says, Nakamura only shook your hand out of pity, which you might be able to get away with actually making us believe that. But then you went ahead and gave him his babyface music, which removed all doubt. It added to the detriment of the doubt. So Brian is saying he's I'll beat you tonight in the match. So that was earlier today. So Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro is a great match. Of course it is. It's Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro. It's a great match. And you know, you might be assuming that they're going to try and put Daniel Bryan over since he lost last week to Nakamura. They're trying to get you in a position where they're going to wind up giving us Daniel Bryan winning the Royal Rumble for the first time in his career and going on to face Roman Reigns at Mania in Daniel Bryan's last ever WrestleMania as a full-time wrestler, because he has said he wants to transition to being a creative guy for the company and to work only part-time because he wants to be a dad, and he's taken enough bumps in his life. He's ready to transition to being a lazy part-timer, as they say, a part-time bastard. So you would be forgiven if you thought, oh, well, Daniel Bryan's going to win this match to help regain some momentum heading to the Royal Rumble. Well, not so fast, my friend, because Cesaro won this match. Where did Kelly come from? I'm losing my mind. Where did Kelly come from? I have no idea. Cesaro doesn't sound like Kelly. Cesaro beats Daniel Bryan, and I have dementia, and he looks great. Like, it's an amazing spot where Cesaro is sitting on the top rope facing into the ring. And Daniel Bryan climbs up and they fight a little bit. And somehow Cesaro picks him up into a vertical suplex and then falls toward the ring and turns to like do a superplex that starts facing the ring. It's just a crazy spot. It's amazing. Cesaro is amazing. And he says he's going to be in the Royal Rumble, and they do a thing earlier when he's on commentary where Corey Graves says you have a pretty good shot at it because you won the first ever Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal by throwing out the Big Show by yourself. So I like that they're trying to build that up, but I don't believe that. Do you believe that? Do you believe they're going to have Cesaro win the Royal Rumble? I would wish, but I don't think that's going to happen. On the other hand, he did beat Daniel Bryan last night. Clean as a whistling sheet. Bryan went for the running knee, got stopped by a pop-up uppercut, and then the new Gotch neutralizer, and that's it. 1, 2, 3. Lost clean. 2 weeks in a row. Pinfall. Lost clean. To guys, as I've said, who lose most of their matches and have since the summer. Guys who have been presented to us as nothing more than mid-card heels for most of their WWE careers in consecutive weeks pinned Daniel Bryan. That does not bode well for his Royal Rumble victory chances. Unless they're doing the thing of like, you know how we make them root for Daniel Bryan? Have him lose all the time. It worked before. Great match, though. Totally recommend you finding it and watching it if you have not. Sasha Banks interrupts a Carmella promo attacking her, and then Reginald gets in between them. And Sasha Banks, I mean, Carmella's not. Carmella's just doing blah, 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 blah. Like, they're not giving her anything new to say or whatever. And it is weird that, like, is Reginald the sommelier? Is he like James Ellsworth, but with dreadlocks and a better taste in fine wines? Although he brought out some Corbel, so maybe he doesn't have that much fancier taste in wines than James Ellsworth. But my point is, before all this, like for all of last year, or for a good portion, wasn't it for like almost like 6 months or whatever? Carmella's, her only thing was that she ran around like hanging out with R-Truth. That was it. And then during one of her title reigns, she was entirely protected by James Ellsworth. James Ellsworth won the first women's Money in the Bank match by dropping her the briefcase when he climbed up there for her. And now she's hiding behind a sommelier. A Cirque du Sommelier. Because he's from Cirque du Soleil, get it? It feels like they think that Carmella needs a male character around to make her interesting, which is just not true. They could start writing better promos for her. Maybe that would work. Maybe that would help. Anyway, Reginald gets in between her and Sasha, which is weird because Sasha has shown that she has no problem punching Reginald in the face. So why he thinks he can stand between Sasha and Carmella doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But okay. I like that Sasha says, okay, you tell your girl she can have her title match, but only if I get a match with you first. So we're going to see Sasha Banks kick the shit out of a small acrobat. That could work. So Reginald is very worried, but Carmella is smiling. So she probably is, you know, she's plotting something. So they present this next match as though it is somehow a number one contenders match. And it is, because the winner of the match, it is announced on the broadcast, will get a title match next week. But if that was what they were going to do, then just call it that. just call it that. It's not, but they act as though it is, and then it turns out to be one. So why not just say this is a number one contenders match for the Intercontinental Championship? Because Apollo Crews beats Sami Zayn, and then later they announce Apollo Crews has a number one, has a Intercontinental Championship match against Big E next week. You could promote this tonight, a number one contenders match for the Intercontinental title. Apollo Crews versus Sami Zayn. Instead, it's like Apollo Crews versus Sami Zayn. This could have a lot of ramifications in the Intercontinental title hunt. Do you understand how one is better than the other? Why are you under, if you know what the result is going to be, that the winner of the match is going to get a title shot, why not just call it a number one contendership match? Because that adds immediate stakes to the match. Apollo Crews is great, doing some really good work. Sami Zayn is always fantastic, but you never really believe Sami's going to win because Big E is I was going to say seated at ringside. Big E is lounged at ringside. He's laying down on a white leather couch. And he's great. He's great on commentary. I think it's a wonderful thing they're doing with Big E, where he is still the same, loves to have fun, Big E, but he can snap right to being serious about wanting to kick your ass in a heartbeat. I think that's great. So, Sammy, tries to do the hold the tights for the win. And the referee sees it and says, no. And so Sammy's like, what are you doing? And they yell. And eventually, Crews dodges a haluva kick, rolls him up, and uses the tights for leverage. And he pulls the tights so hard, we see full on one quarter of the length of Sami Zayn's butt crack on Fox TV. But this time the ref doesn't see it. So Crews wins. And Crews gets out and he goes to talk mess to Big E. And Big E says, I saw what you did. Don't think I didn't see what you did. Good for you. I'm glad you got your win. Good for you. But you cheated, and we both know you cheated. And meanwhile, Sami Zayn's yelling about the double standard, which, you know, he's not wrong. But I love that they were able to have Crews pick up the victory and cheat to do it. But it's kind of okay because Sami tried to cheat before, which is like keeping his character got a little bit more gray area than maybe he deserves right now. I think we all see where this is headed. I don't think he's going to beat Big E next week. And I think that there's a chance that losing to Big E sets him off enough that he fully joins the bloodline. And I think he might eventually take the title off of Big E. And Big E going after Apollo Crews to get his title back will put him firmly in the crosshairs of Roman Reigns, who has Apollo Crews in his crew. And then we might wind up seeing a Big E moving on from the Intercontinental title scene to the big title held by the big tribal chief. I love it. I think it's a really interesting way of getting Big E into Roman Reigns' orbit. I think that's a fantastic way. Listen, I firmly believe every good thing that happens on SmackDown is all Paul Heyman's doing. I'm not saying the man's perfect, but he seems to really know what he's doing with the, with these storylines and the right people getting involved in them. So, they do a fun little deal where Adam Pearce comes out and he sits down, and Roman Reigns is going to sit, but he says, "I don't want to sit in that chair. I want that chair." And Pearce is like, "Oh, do we have to do this?" And so he slowly tries to get up, and James is like, "What are you doing, fam? Get your ass up! My cousin's going to sit here." I think Jay snapping every more every week because as he's losing his mind by having to be this guy, I think it's good. It's very good. So this is gonna be the last contract you ever sign. And it says so Pierce closes the contract. Reigns has smiled it. Pierce signs the contract. Then Reigns smiles the contract, signs the contract. And Pierce is like, says, "I've waited all night for you to do that." And then he gets up and walks up the ramp. Now, the moment that I loved, we said, "I've waited all night for you to do that." And Reigns gets his look on his face like, What eventuality did I not plan for? Like, I have to be the one in charge. What did I fuck up? What did you fuck up, Paul, by not planning for? What did he get over us? And I thought, this is gonna be a good cliffhanger. Like, it's not a good cliffhanger where it's like, did Randy Orton burn Alexa Bliss to death? Find out next week. This is a good cliffhanger, I thought. Finding out what plan Adam Pearce has set in motion. Interesting, I thought. And I forgot, no, there's a couple minutes left in the show. So Adam Pearce, they're going to not do a cliffhanger. They're going to set all the wheels in motion right now. Adam Pearce walks up the ramp and then starts favoring his knee and says, "Oh, look at that. My knee is hurt." It must be one of those, you know, those old injuries creep on you up on you in the worst time. It looks like I probably won't be able to compete. I'll have to find a suitable replacement for this last man standing match at the Royal Rumble. But don't worry, I have one in mind. And then Kevin Owens' music hits and he comes out. And he signs the contract, and Reigns is like, "I thought I took care of you." This is what he looks like, he's saying in his mind. "I thought I took care of you, and now I'm gonna have to kill you to keep you down for 10 seconds. So I like that they went to Owens. I do. It seems like they did too much work. You know what I mean? They did too many things. If they had gone off the air after Adam Pearce says, "I've been waiting all night for you to do that," then next week you have Adam Pearce limping around, obviously faking it, but limping around. And then he's like, "I'm going to have to go see a doctor because I don't know if I'm going to be cleared to compete." And Reigns is like, "What are you doing, man? Listen. It's an old injury. What can I say? It creeps up on the worst times." This is next week, by the way. This is what they should be doing next week. And so the whole night, they're like, "You know what? I went and saw the trainer, the doctor. They're not going to clear me. So it looks like I'm not going to be able to compete at the Royal Rumble. But don't worry. A WWE official will just have to find a suitable replacement for the match. Luckily, I happen to be a WWE official, and I have already found that replacement for your match." And then Kevin Owens comes out. Do you know why? Right? Because last night was the 15th. The Royal Rumble is on the 31st, which means we have two more episodes of SmackDown to fill. So you could have had the ending of last night's SmackDown be next week's SmackDown. And then we only have one more SmackDown to fill, making sure we keep Roman and Owens as far away from each other as possible so that when we have the match on Sunday, it feels fresh. Now you have 2 weeks to try and keep them apart, and that's going to be harder to do without it making it seem obvious and cumbersome to keep them apart. I really think you could have found a way to do both things. The other thing I wonder about is, how did Adam Pearce know that, because the way he was doing it, it seemed like he knew that Roman was going to make it into a last man standing match, which there's no way he could have known. Like, he's like, well, I know Roman Reigns and I know the way he thinks. And like, nah, fuck that shit. That's not believable. It could just be like a regular old fucking match. That was the first thing was a regular old fucking match. And then they made it a no DQ match, but then Reigns was like, no. And then they made it into a last man standing match. I don't know. Am I excited about last man standing match, Owens versus Reigns? Yes. They're very, very good together. This feud has been fantastic. They found a little wrinkle to get it involved. Does the thing with Nakamura last week make less sense this week? Yes. Yes, it does. But whatever the fuck it was, it's Elimination Chamber, Fast Lane, whatever the hell happens between the Royal Rumble and Roadblock, end of the line, whatever happens between Stomping Grounds, whatever happens between Royal Rumble, Great Balls of Fire, whatever happens between the Royal Rumble, Sands of Time, whatever happens between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, whatever pay-per-view that is, it'll be Nakamura versus Roman, and Roman will win. And then he'll have his match against the Royal Rumble winner, probably, I think. Or maybe SmackDown gets the Elimination Chamber and Nakamura wins that. And that's how we get Nakamura versus him at the Royal. Listen. Nakamura. He's been in WWE for 6 years. This is his sixth year in WWE. He's not that guy. They have spared no expense in making sure we see him as not that guy. So he doesn't get a Mania match versus Roman Reigns. Nope. Sorry. You can't do that. You can't do all of a sudden stuff with him. This is not Kofi Mania. We're not doing Shinsuke Mania. It's not happening. You can't make it work. My God, I am so terrible. I went with Shinsuke Mania instead of the obvious Nakamania. Nakamania ain't happening. What are we going to do, brothers, when Nakamania runs wild on us? Nothing. We're not going to do anything because it's not going to happen. That's not going to be a thing they can get done. It just isn't. They've fucked him up too much. But that Fast Lane match, or that roadblock end of the line match, or whatever, Fans of Time, whatever it is going to be, it's going to be a great match, I'm sure. But still, no chance in hell. Speaking of no chance in hell, I went longer than I thought I was going to, but I'm still going to do this stupid fucking Okay. This terrible fucking thing, man. They did a Mania reveal video that they posted to their Twitter and their Instagram and their fucking posted to their Twitter and their Instagram and their YouTube and probably their Parler account too, because you know Vince has a Parler account or had. But it's a reveal. Like it's 4.5 fucking minutes long, and every second is a slog. It shows. It's a really bad, like, green screen news desk, I guess. And it's a Triple H, obviously Triple H in a wig with glasses, and obviously Stephanie McMahon in glasses with her hair pulled back in some weird ponytail thing. And we are not who you think we are. We are just two regular newscasters with normal newscaster sounding names. And this is it. Stephanie's newscaster name, as written below her, says Anita Real Man. Get it? Because Anita Man is obvious. That's a thing. That's a Bart Simpson's prank call from 1988. 89? I don't want to be untruthful. I think it's 89. Where he calls Mo the bartender and says, Anita Man. Anita Man. Hey, everybody, I need a man. But now it's I need a real man, so it's totally different now. Trips' fake name is Henry E. Pankey. Do you get it? What's short for Henry? Hank. So his name is Hanky Panky. Oh, Hanky Panky. If you've ever used the phrase hanky panky in a non-ironic way, like hanky panky, not like, oh, they're getting up to some hanky panky, because you know it's a stupid phrase. If you ever said it just as part of your vocabulary, you are 85 years old. Hanky panky, fuck that shit. So they're newscasters, right? So let's go out to Sonny McStuff and Puff. I don't know what the fuck they... Sonny McWeather or whatever. And they go to Roman Reigns, who's sitting behind a big chair with Paul Heyman with him. Says, I'm not doing this. I'm not a weatherman. We're not doing this shit. Paul, tell him about it. And Paul's like, you know, well, if we were going to do it. And Roman's like, no, we're not going to do it. Right? And so Paul's like, okay, so WrestleMania 37 will take place in Tampa Bay at Raymond James Stadium in this April, right? So Roman even says, we're not going to join the parade. That's what he says. This, I honestly believe, was shot to be the third of three let's go live on the scene to blankety blank, right? Because the way the rule of three in comedy works is establish the joke, continue the joke, either build to the biggest joke or undercut the joke. That's the third thing. That's the way comedy works. The people who wrote this thing know that. And I guarantee you, Vince said, no, we can't have Roman last. He's got to be first. Which ruins the whole bit. Because the next thing they do is they go to Sasha Banks, who has some stupid fucking nickname. And she's there. And she announces that it's bad comedy. The thing with Sasha is really badly written. She's got some personal assistant who's there who mucks the whole thing. It's fucking bad. But she's got some terrible name. I don't know what it is. And she, the next thing is, her name is Hailey Mary. Hailey Mary is the name of Sasha Banks' character. Like Hail Mary, you know, like it was a football stadium, because they reveal that Dallas is going to get, not Dallas, it's going to be Arlington. The Dallas Cowboys Stadium in Texas is going to get the WrestleMania in 2022. Okay, fine. Like WrestleMania 32 is one of the worst WrestleManias. Just is. Not good. It's not a good one. They had some bad stuff that was the one where they did Brock versus Dean. And they did. Was that Roman versus Triple H? It's a bad WrestleMania, man. The women's triple threat was pretty good. So there's that. So let's give Dallas another shot at it because they fucked it up so bad the last time. So anyway, they do that one and they move on. They go again. They keep going back to Trips and Stephanie in the studio, and they're making terrible jokes, just unfunny, like to the 1 millionth power, just awful. And then they go let's go to our entertainment reporter. Like there's, they do one thing where they, God, WrestleMania, says Triple H, what a tremendous spectacle. And then Stephanie says, hey, Hank, you're a tremendous spectacle. And like weird porn guitar starts playing and she goes, rawr. Like it's just, what? What? And then they go to our entertainment reporter. Hugh can't see me. And his name is Hugh, like Hugh Grant. And then can't see me is spelled can't see me, but all one word except for the C is a K. Hugh can't see me. And the thing was is that they go to him and there's nothing there. Get it? Because you can't see me. It's John Cena, but you can't see me. You can't see me. It's John Cena. You can't see me. Are you even there? Hugh, are you there, Hugh? And then John Cena steps back, and you can tell he was like standing next to the camera. Like, I love that joke. And then he makes some more Hollywood jokes or whatever. And so it looks like LA is finally getting their Mania that they were promised. It was supposed to happen in like 2 months, but because of COVID, they pushed it back 2 full fucking years. I don't know what is happening in LA next March or April that they can't do. They can't just push it back 1 year. They had to push it back 2 years, which sucks for LA people. Because they haven't had a Mania since like 2005, I think. Anyway, so that big stadium or whatever. SoFi Stadium. Or as I call it, says Stephanie Mann, So Fine Stadium. That isn't even like, that doesn't even qualify as an observation, let alone a joke. SoFi Stadium? More like So Fine Stadium. Who came up with that? Also, John Cena, last Mania, was banished to the Phantom Zone by the Fiend Bray Wyatt. His first appearance, I believe, for WWE since then has been unceremoniously as Hugh can't see me in this stupid Mania reveal video. They could have done a big thing where like he came back from the Phantom Zone to get revenge on the Fiend. No, he's just here. So that awesome thing they did where like they winked him out of existence. Now he's back. It's cool. Don't even worry about it. It's not a thing. We forgot about it ourselves. You guys just cannot stay out of your own way. I think it should be called the 10th wonder of the world, this So Fine Stadium, says Stephanie McMahon. And then Hanky Panky says, it really makes you wonder why it's not. Get it? Wonder and wonder? They sound the same. They're the same fucking word. I do not know who thought this was good and said, let's release it to reveal our Mania stuff. It's so bad. It makes the company, a billion-dollar fucking company, look rinky-dink. It looks like a fucking child put it together. It certainly looks like a child fucking wrote it. This is what makes me so angry overall with the company. Is they should have so many talented people working for them. They have the money to pay them, but apparently they don't pay really well. And they don't give great perks. And you have a micromanager who's a crazy man at the top who won't let any of your good ideas through. So it looks like shit. So the company looks like shit by putting out a shit reveal of their manias that are coming up. If there was ever a time to like say, you know what? How about let's do Mania? If there was ever a time to like say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do SummerSlam in another country. It's this year. Do SummerSlam in Australia. To SummerSlam in Australia. If you look at what Australia is doing with the pandemic right now, they're doing pretty good. They figured that shit out. Stop doing major events in the States for a while, because I got to tell you, the way it's looking, the majority of our population isn't going to be vaccinated by Mania of 2022. Sorry, Dallas. But I'm sure it's Texas, so they'll be open to full capacity even if there aren't vaccinations. Anyway, what was I talking about? Yeah, fuck this company. Everything sucks. This has been Sour Graps. That was SmackDown and the Mania reveal thing. This has been Sour Graps. I've been Alex Pulaski. Buy some lemonade. It's our official sponsor, even though they don't give me any money. Like, I went in my brain and I said, Cesaro. And then I said, don't say Cesaro. Say the word Kelly. I think WWE is officially driving me insane. But until I get there, I'll be back here talking about Raw and then SmackDown again and then Raw again and then SmackDown again and then Raw again. Yeah. Everything sucks.